Before we go into this sermon today, which will be given by Mr. Armstrong, it's a take by Mr. Armstrong on unity, I do have a number of news items that I think it would be worthwhile bringing to everybody. And certainly there's been an awful lot going on in the news over the past couple of weeks, certainly since I've done a news analysis, prophetic news analysis, before. And I think the major thing that seems to have broken is this issue over the cartoons that were put out in a Danish newspaper depicting Muhammad, and apparently it is illegal to even go ahead and have any kind of icon. If you go into a mosque, you will not find any kind of, not only icon, but you won't even find a picture of anything. It's unlike all these sort of so-called Christian churches that you'll go into. And to go ahead and depict Muhammad as a terrorist is something that obviously is offensive to the Muslim people. The interesting thing is that when it was first mentioned, and this gives an idea, really an idea about how really the culture of the West, how different the culture of the West is from the culture that we see within the Middle East and the culture we see within the Muslim people, is that the first time it was mentioned was on page 15 of the Telegraph, and this was back on Tuesday, January the 31st, so the end of last month. It just made the mention, Danes face fury over cartoons of Prophet. A Danish newspaper apologized to Muslims last night after provoking fury in the Arab world by running cartoons featuring the Prophet Muhammad. Now that was, as I say, at the end of last month, and it was a case that it was relegated to the inside pages. And at the same time, on the Saturday, February the 4th, it comes out with another article here. It says, Turkish film of murdering GIs adds fuel to the smouldering anti-US feelings. Again, the West is looking at it as a political thing. It's looking at this particular film that was brought out in Turkey. It says, the most expensive film ever made in Turkey looks like deepening the growing anti-American sentiment triggered by the occupation in Iraq. Scenes include gum-chewing, wild-eyed American soldiers raiding a wedding party in Iraq for sport, and they pump bullets into dozens of guests and so on. It's pretty offensive, and yet that's the way in which it is portrayed. And although, yes, it's offensive, the outcry and anger just simply isn't there in the West. It's a political thing. It certainly doesn't go ahead and provoke what we then started to see. This is coming from the same paper, Saturday, February the 4th. Now we're looking at page 4. It's moved up into the news. It's also expanded its coverage. America backs Muslims over cartoons as thousands voice anger worldwide. In other words, America therefore tries to placate the Muslim people to go ahead and say that, it's the problem of actually publishing the cartoons. It says, America sided with tens of thousands of Muslims who protested worldwide yesterday about cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad published in European newspapers. In his first comment on the furore, the State Department said these cartoons are indeed offensive to the beliefs of Muslims. So that again, it's a case of trying to placate the ideas. The flame of Islamic fury spreads to Beirut. This is Monday, February the 6th, so we're looking at just last Monday. Here again, it's on page 4. It's thousands of Muslim demonstrators in Beirut clashed with police yesterday, storming the Danish consulate, setting it ablaze in protest over the cartoons that mocked the Prophet Muhammad. And a day after the Syrian demonstrations set on fire the Norwegian and Danish embassies in Damascus, the violence then spread to Lebanon. And so it goes on, and you can see this thing developing day by day as it comes through. Another one on page 12, February the 7th, how clerics spread hatred over the cartoons. And it also then points out that we've been putting up with this for years, says Israel. And it's got a cartoon here of Sharon with the blood of Palestinian children being shown in Arab media. And that's pretty mild, quite frankly, from some of the things that I've read about that have been portrayed within the Arabic media about the Israel, specifically and the Pearson people in Israel. As world leaders pleaded for calm in the Mohammed cartoon row yesterday, the Danish Muslim leaders who set the crisis in motion insisted that they had been trying to promote a dialogue of civilizations. They also angrily denied allegations from moderate Muslims and European intelligence services that hidden masterminds triggered the sudden explosion of protests. So you see this thing building and going out of all proportion, it almost seems, certainly to the Western mind, to the Western way of looking at things. Protesters, this is coming now from Wednesday, this last Wednesday, February the 8th. Protester who dressed as a bomber is sent back to jail. We had this over in London, and this particular individual was a drug dealer. He happened to be a Muslim, and he went out there protesting, dressed as a suicide bomber, and it broke the conditions of his parole and was sent back to jail. And again, it's the flavour and the way in fact the whole thing started to snowball. In addition, it's not as if they fuel. It isn't that fuel is actually poured on troubled water. It's fuel is poured onto a fire. This is from yesterday, Friday the 10th. We're looking at a German who printed the name of the Quran on toilet paper and offered the rolls for sale to mosques, is actually to fail trial for disturbing the public peace. So, you know, but again, people kind of get in on the act, and it is certainly something that wasn't exactly trying to placate the people at all. But within all this, you get a two-faced approach to things. Certainly, you've got this. We've got a site here. This is from the Thursday, the 9th. It says the BBC said last night that it would review a religious website after being accused by the former head of the corporation of an evident cultural cringe in a select section on Islam. Will Wyatt, the chief executive for 3 years until 1999, examined the site on religion and ethics and found that it was written as fact that Muhammad met an angel. In other words, the actual website on the BBC, the official website, treated all the areas of the Quran as absolute fact. And again, it is this placating of the activists, because they start to run scared of it. At the same time, pupil refuses to wear uniform of non-believers. A Muslim schoolgirl refused to wear school uniform because she was not prepared to dress in the same clothes as non-believers, British highest court told yesterday. Another placating idea, it says, change the oath of allegiance to help Sinn Féin, says a Tory. The oath of allegiance to the Queen, sworn by MPs, should be reviewed to encourage Sinn Féin to take up its 5 seats in the House of Commons. That is David Lidington, the Conservative Northern Ireland spokesman, said yesterday. So again, it is trying to placate the Northern Irish at that time about their role. Free speech, Labour cares more about the Muslim vote. It's 10 years since Tony Blair told me in an interview with Sunday Telegraph of the fascination with Pontius Pilate. And it's interesting that was actually kind of came out. It says, in an exploration of his personal beliefs, the Labour leader explained that he viewed Pilate as the archetypical politician caught on the horns of an age-old political dilemma. It is not always clear, even in retrospect, what is truth and what is right. Should we do what appears principled or what is politically expedient? And this is the heart and the core. This is the key that we find in all of these things. And we see this, these concepts, and we see this constant placating of certain people's beliefs. And it goes down into many, many areas. There is an article somewhere I've got in here. See if I can actually find it. Yes, here we go. Because at the same time as this was going on, the far right was up for criticising the Muslim religion. They were saying that the Muslims were, I think they actually said that it was going to cause a bloodbath in Britain, and it's made certain criticisms of what in fact was going on. And this particular individual, this BNP leader, in fact, is going to have a second trial now on race hate charges, but he was taken to court for his comments, which was really describing what he foresaw within Britain because of this kind of thing. It is interesting that this doesn't necessarily happen in other areas. The interesting thing is that at the same time as this is going on, we're looking down in Zimbabwe, and it says Zimbabwe crops fail despite good rain. It says food crops in Zimbabwe have failed again despite ample rainfall. So unlike the rest of East Africa, Zimbabwe has had ample rainfall, and yet it cannot feed itself. And yet, you know, if you start criticizing, Mr. Mugabe's land grab and his political views, but you start criticizing the overall government structure, the fact that the, you know, having democracy in Zimbabwe, democracy in quotes, has produced this kind of chaos, that would be, you know, despised and looked down on. And yet when you look at, let's just turn over and just notice a few scriptures. If you notice over in Leviticus chapter 20, and this is something we have got to keep in mind as we read what's going on in the world and in the Western world, and we see how they're constantly kowtowing to forces and trying to, as it says, Mr. Blair is taken with Pontius Pilate. They have this dilemma. What does he do? Does he do what's right, or does he do what's expedient? And what's happening today is people are doing what is expedient. Why? Because there's no moral bedrock there anymore. The word of God that was once the bedrock that was, you know, used by the country has been dissipated. It's been destroyed. If we notice in chapter 20 of Leviticus, verse 25, it says, "You shall therefore put a difference between clean beast and unclean, and between clean fowls and clean, and you will not make your souls," that's your flesh, your breathing creature, "abominable by beast or fowl or any manner of living thing that creeps on the ground which I have separated from you as unclean." So this is the law of clean and unclean meats. But notice why. "And you shall be holy unto me, for I, the Eternal, am holy, and have separated or severed you from other people, that you should be mine." There was a distinction between the people that regarded this book as holy and other people. And this distinction was actually within our countries, within the Western world, within Britain, within America, within Israel, Ephraim and Manasseh. And it says, so it basically makes this distinction. And it even ties it in. The reason for keeping clean and unclean meats was to remind us that there is this distinction. And as we make a distinction, as we go around our normal daily life, this should be part of the reason why we, you know, eat clean food. Is that there is a distinction that we must remain clean. We must remain separate. We are not part of this mishmash, this political expediency that we find within the world. You find the same kind of thing over in Deuteronomy, notice, Deuteronomy chapter 4. It says in Deuteronomy 4, it says, verse 6, it says, "Keep therefore and do them," talking about the statutes and judgments and laws of God, the things that were written within this book. It says, "For this is your wisdom." This is what it makes the difference. This is what separates you out and gives you the wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the nations. So there is a distinction between what you have here and what is in the nations outside. And there is a distinction between what we have within this book and what the Muslims have within the Quran. A great distinction. And the wisdom within this book should make a distinction within this nation, but it's not doing so. And within America, but it's not doing so. It's trying to make a multicultural statement, and it views what's going on almost like Pontius Pilate. And it's, what do you do? Do you do what is right, or do you do what is expedient? And they will always go towards the expedient instead of what is right, because they don't have the moral basis anymore. And this is what we were witnessing within the country. And we've got to make sure that we, within the church, as we watch the news, as we see these things going on, you know, this thing about Mugabe to ask the whites back in the land grab U-turn. I mean, he is actually asking the whites to come back and take over, because he can see the chaos that the entire country is in, and yet the fundamental changes have not been made. The fundamental problems which are there, the fact that he will take over the land at the moment's notice, if it becomes politically expedient for him again, he hasn't changed one whit. All he's witnessing is the destruction of the country. And you know, this idea of racism and how it's, you know, we shouldn't be racist. We shouldn't go ahead and just look upon somebody as inferior because of their race. But there is a distinction, and the distinction in these words, and Mugabe is, you know, really hot under the collar about the idea that the whites should have a place within the world by right, by birth, by the fact that they happen to be this particular nation. And yet that's the way it seems to, you know, the Bible describes. I remember one time in Nigeria, we were going around a slave museum. I think I've given this incident before. But we were going around the slave museum in Nigeria. And I remember when we first went in there, the person who was going to show us round looked at myself and my wife, and because we were the only whites in the whole group that was going to go around, and you could see his face completely changed, his jaw dropped, as if to say, now what am I going to do? And he obviously made the decision to just go ahead and give the presentation as he would normally give it, and he did. And he went through this entire museum talking about how these evil whites were constantly coming in and enslaving these poor blacks, and it was a pure, total white and black issue, if I can put it that way. It was nothing else, purely race. And eventually we went to, and I thought, well, you know, if this had been the West, if somebody even dared to give this kind of diatribe within, say, our country, the race relations would have had him no messing at all. You know, just none. I mean, there's no way that he could go ahead and do that. But he was doing this day in, day out to school children that were going around and seeing these exhibits. And the interesting thing is that we've got this kind of political expediency. There's an article here. I don't know whether I can actually find it straight off. There's one here by the Church of England who apologises for the slave trade. I can't find it straight off, but anyway, he's apologising for the slave trade. Now, the thing that really got to me, and finally I had had enough by the time we'd gone through most of that, the fact that the lights kept going off as well, because the electricity supply was so abominable within the country, and they were going around by torchlight showing these exhibits because the electricity wouldn't work. And it got to a particular point. I said, look, they were showing us the money, the actual ingots that were there, that were in this kind of display. And I said, excuse me, can I ask a question? Who was the money actually paid to? And he said, I don't understand. I said, well, look, they were buying slaves, and who was the money paid to? He said, well, the chiefs. I said, well, so it wasn't the whites who enslaved the people, it was the chiefs. And the chiefs enslaved their own people and sold them to the whites. Is that all right? And he literally turned and ran. He had no... He turned and ran. He had no explanation. He could give nothing in reply at all. Because it's clear. They were taking ingots down to pay for slaves. And the people that were enslaving the people were the chiefs. They weren't the whites at all. Yes, they would go ahead and have raiding parties and so on. Yes, it was all... They'd sometimes pay it to Arabs, who also were involved in the trade. But the idea that the whites enslaved the blacks is wrong. It was a slave trade that was engaged in by the people, by the actual people themselves. And it was the same kind of thing that we had when we used to ship convicts across to Australia. The same things exactly. They would get rid of the troublemakers by selling them to the whites and make some money out of it in the process, who would be taken across to the West Indies. And so there's this politically correct idea, this idea that we see today in so many, many cases of do you do what is right or do you do what is politically expedient? And we constantly see this political expediency because the moral basis has gone from the country. If you turn over to Micah chapter 4, Micah chapter 4, there's something we are going to have to really understand. We find Micah. Micah, Nahum, there we go. Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah. Micah chapter 4. Something we need to understand when we're coming into the millennium and the value that we have got within this book. You know, Queen Victoria, when she was asked what's the secret of England's greatness, asked for a Bible to be brought, and this was an Indian prince, somebody from India, one of the princes from India, came over to the UK, asked Queen Victoria, what's the secret of the greatness of England? I mean, here's this tin pot nation sitting on the outside of Europe. Why should it become the greatest power that the world has ever seen, certainly at that time, and if not ever? But here in Micah chapter 4, it says that, in this section, verse 3, and he shall judge among many people, rebuke strong nations afar off, and they will beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks, and nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. Now why? What's actually happening here? We're here seeing the return of Christ. We're seeing the implementation of a government based on this word. And the things that we are learning today within the church are based on this word. But they shall sit, every man under his vine and his fig tree, and none shall make them afraid, for the mouth of the eternal host has spoken it. It's the word of God that's spoken that thing, and the word of God will bring it about, and the wisdom that is built within that word is what is given to us, and what was actually given to Britain and America as Ephraim and Manasseh, and yet they've now discarded it, and they're going, the blind's leading the blind. You get this political expediency within the news. But notice what it says. For all people will walk everyone in the name of his God. In other words, all people may go out and they'll walk everyone in the name of their God. Currently, that's what's happening. The Muslims are walking in the name of their God. Mugabe is walking in the name of his God, which is atheism. You know, everybody, in every corner you'll find everybody walking in the name of their God. But it says, we will walk in the name of the eternal, our God, forever and ever. In other words, this will be a kingdom that will not be removed. It will be established. And this is why the people of God today, it's so vitally important that we go back to the foundation, that we get onto that foundation, and we don't go ahead and get off it. Because the foundation that we have is a moral one. It's a moral one that the world itself has lost. And we see the chaos within the news as being the result of it. So I just thought I'd bring that, just really making a comment on the major story that seems to be breaking around us today, this story of these cartoons, and just showing what lies really behind it and what we should need to be looking at as we look at the news today in the church.